journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavua Tov and Chodesh Tov. We've just come and moved into the month of Nisan yesterday. We are in the month of redemption, and it is our heartfelt prayer that we see redemption come to the Jewish people, come to our captives, come to the world entirely, and that this month we should see the redemption of the world with the coming of Mashiach that will not only benefit the Jewish people, but of course all righteous Gentiles all over the world, a world of peace, a world of harmony, a world of health, a world of serving God, and that's really what we work towards. And the way that we do is that we learn Torah. One of the mitzvahs of the Torah is to learn Torah, and in fact it's one of the primary ones because it actually assists us in understanding and making sense of our godly existence. So thank you for joining me this Monday, and as always, if you have any questions, you can ask on our SMS line 34519 or on our WhatsApp 061-895-1019. We are in the book of Exodus, and we are at the foot of the mountain. We are wanting to learn the Ten Commandments, but I am spending a tremendous amount of time before that explaining to you this whole giving of the Torah. It wasn't just a simple thing. It just wasn't a little show that happened. Because really, in truth, it changed the world fundamentally. It changed the world fundamentally in and of itself. It changed the Jewish people fundamentally. Forever and a time, it changed the way that we understand the world and we actually gain access to the world. So we're spending time discussing the various aspects, and really what I'm trying to do is to give you an appreciation of the enormity, of the importance, of the brilliance of the giving of the Torah, why it has been so fundamental, and why is it that 5,785 years later we have a people called the Jewish people who are still believing in what we call in the outside world the Bible, but it's the Bible that was given to us on Har Sinai, on the Mount Sinai, but with all its commentaries and understandings that actually give us an insight into the where, the what, the why of the world. So last week we started speaking about the fact that there were many, many miracles that happened. I'm not even going to get to the miracles this week. We maybe we'll discuss it next week, that there were 40 miracles that happened that were done that allowed this giving of the Torah to happen. And there were 8 advantages. And the first advantage is that we were talking about the fact that God actually went and offered the Torah to all the nations of the world, and they all refused it. If you missed that podcast, please go back onto archive podcasts on our website, and you'll be able to follow that up. So the first one was that we kind of like landed up being the only nation that said the words Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will hear. We were not defined in a certain culture that would reject the presence of God. And so that landed up being one of our advantages. I want to go now and start discussing a number of others and see how far we actually get with that. Now, let me just take you back, for the second advantage, just take you back to what happened again, so we can just all be fresh in our minds that we understand. We know that on Monday, the first day of Sivan, the Israelites came to the desert, and since they were so exhausted from the journey, God didn't speak to them at all. On Tuesday, they came to Mount Sinai and camped right next to it, and Moses went up in the morning to stand before God, and he told him all the things discussed in the previous chapter. And this was the first time that the Israelites could express their thoughts, and it was there where they went and said the words, we will do all that Hashem said. We showed our formal acceptance to it. Then on Wednesday, God gave the Israelites the command to make a boundary around the mountain so no one would come too close. On Thursday, God told Moses, "Now tell all the people to sanctify themselves today and tomorrow. They should remain separated from the opposite sex for 2 days so that they would be ritually pure on the third day when the Torah was given." And then what happened was that was Thursday and Friday. On Friday night, it was Erev Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av. Erev Shavuot. It was the eve of the sixth of Sivan. All the preparations were done. Everything was fixed up. Everything put in its place. And we were very confident that we were making the right choice, that we had obligated ourselves to God, and we slept very soundly. In fact, we did not wake up, says the Midrash, until the second hour of the day. Now, during this time of year, the days are long, the nights are short. So when you can hop around a good night's sleep, that's very, very pleasurable. And obviously, everybody also was in a very, very good mood. They were very excited. They didn't have any worries. Everybody had been healed, as we said. And it says, the Midrash says, that even a mosquito didn't bite them. So guess what happened? We slept kind of like through the event. And so when the time for the Ten Commandments came to be given, the people were still sleeping. So they needed an alarm to wake them up. And for this reason, the day began with thunder and lightning. That was the way God wakes us up. So don't be cross with your time clock, you know, that maybe wakes you up in a more gentle way. Can you imagine being fast asleep and then hearing cracks of thunder and lightning and a heavy cloud and all the noise that was associated with it? This, what I just told you, is the basis why we have taken on the custom that on the eve of the night of Shavuot, so the first night of Shavuot going into the first day, we do not go to sleep at night. We do what's called Tikkun Lel. Tikkun means rectification. And Tikkun Lel means that we are trying to rectify the misdemeanor of our ancestors in that they fell asleep just before the arrival of the Torah. We want to show that we're not going to fall asleep. And so all of us stay awake all night, every Shavuot since then, since 3,330 odd years ago. So that is how we actually rectified that misdemeanor of them all falling asleep and sleeping so peacefully in anticipation for the receiving of the Torah.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Welcome back. Okay, so, you know, this whole coming to the Mount Sinai and marrying God is very much likened to a marriage, okay? Because basically the way that it's described in an allegorical way is that we were the bride, God was the groom, the Torah was the ketubah. Moshe Rabbeinu was actually the one that brought the people out of the camp to meet God. So while we were like the bride, Moses was like our unterfuhrer, right? He was our bride's attendant. And he led us to the bridegroom, that being Hashem. And the way that he brought people up, there was a hierarchy. First, the firstborn preceded the rest of Israel because they were the most important people at the time. They were the closest to God. Then came all the other Israelites, the men first, the children next, then the women, then came all the people that had converted, and then came the Erev Rav, which was that mixed multitude who followed the Israelites out of Egypt. Moshe and Aaron went inside the boundary, okay, and Aaron was somewhat a little bit further from the summit, and then Moshe left Aaron, and he went up there. Now, there's a lot of numerics around this. It says that standing before Mount Sinai, there were 600,000 elders, 600,000 young men, 600,000 children, and 600,000 women. And all of us answered in unison all that God says we will do and we will listen. So again, this is driving down the point that the giving of the Torah was not something that was given to a person, a bunch of people, a leader and his little bunch of people. This was given to hundreds of thousands of people who all bore witness to the fact that God delivered his Torah to the world, and therefore it can be and must be indisputable that the Torah is something divine and not something that was made up by someone. Now, also, when the Torah was given, what happened was that Israel became a goy kadosh, a holy nation. We were separated. We became almost, in a sense, if we're taking the analogy, as I've just explained, that we were the bride going to the bridegroom, just like we were now a married woman, just like a married woman cannot have any other men. And that's really, and we'll discuss it a lot more when we come to the concept of you shall have no other gods but me. Part of that is that we were sanctified in holy matrimony with God. And therefore, for the Jewish people, idol worship or any form of looking at something or someone outside of ourselves and believing that they have the power to guide us is completely wrong. And just like a strange man is forbidden to a married woman, so too is the outside world and the way the world functions forbidden to the Jewish people. And just like, again, that a man signs a contract, a ketubah, where he agrees not to divorce his wife against her will, God similarly promised that he would not divorce Israel, which is an important thing because look at our history. We've been around as a people for 3,330-odd years as a people. We existed before with our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph and his brothers. But as a people, we became a nation at Har Sinai. We have been dispersed all over the world in 197 countries. We've gone through assimilation. We've gone through extermination. We've gone through pogroms and inquisitions and destruction and intifadas and you name it. You would, if you go and study sociology, understand that a people that is so fragmented and so scattered all over the world, okay, over millennia, it is an impossibility for such a nation to keep its purity, to remain its nation, to keep its culture, its heritage, and everything around it, while everybody is scattered all over the place. And the only answer, the only understanding that we can get from that is because of this, because of the giving of the Torah. We entered into a covenant, a ketubah, with God. We agreed to be the faithful wife and that we will not go have any other gods but him, that we will be the light unto the nation, will be a sanctified holy people. And in response, God undertook the obligations of the husband, okay, where he says he will not divorce us against our will. And so God has looked after us all over the place. And that's the very famous quote from Mark Twain, who said something, and I'm paraphrasing along the lines, that the Jews are an enigma. They should have disappeared into the annals of history long, long time ago. So this indicates also how great Hashem loves Israel. Now, in the Midrash, Reb Chiya the Great gave a reason that the Torah was given in the third month of the Exodus because, according to Halakha, when a woman becomes a ger, if a woman wants to convert to Judaism, or if she was a captive who was liberated, or if there was a slave who was freed, one could only marry her after 3 months. Now, this is allegorical because there was only 49 days between the coming out of Egypt and the giving of the Torah, but there were 3 months. And this is really where the idea, where Reb Chiya is getting it, is that we had to have, so to speak, the spiritual halach 3 months to allow us to recover and to be a receptacle for the receiving of the Torah. So just like we were talking, I just gave you an example now of a woman who is a ger, who is converting, or a person who's a captive that has to be liberated, or a slave who has to be freed, we can see the same thing from us being in Egypt. We were captives, we were slaves, and we acted like non-Jewish people. Okay, insofar as that, while we were in Egypt, many Israelites were considered as captives because they were subjugated to Pharaoh to do his building, to complete his construction projects. So since they were committed to building these storage cities to defend the capital, they couldn't escape. They were considered prisoners of war. So we had this title of being a captive. Similarly, we were considered slaves because we were under the power of the Egyptian masters. We never had a moment that we could call our own. We were in slavery. And as well, we were considered gerim, people who had to convert, because there were many, many times that the Jews slipped, and they slipped into the culture of the Egyptians. Okay. And we needed to throw off the shackles of our Egyptian thinking and mindset in order to be open enough to accept the Torah from God. So there are three categories of Israelites, and therefore we have the 3 months of Nisan, of Iyar, and of Sivan, which basically gave us the concept of of the 3 month periods that we wait for those three types of people to change, and then they're allowed to marry halachically on a personal level. So that's an interesting concept. And again, something that we need to understand, we've spoken about it before, I'm going to reiterate it again, that in order to receive the Torah, we have to be clear, open vessels. We need to get rid of our misconceptions or our conceptions, our paradigms in which we function, and bring ourselves to a level of humility where we could be open to the Word of God. Once you get to understand it, you will understand, you will see this truth, and it will be undeniable, and you cannot walk away from it. What the Yetzer Hara does, though, it gives us all sorts of excuses and things, and we try to sometimes intellectualize it and explain things. I was listening to a reel of somebody who wasn't Jewish. And they were asking her who she was, and she was saying to the person, I can be whoever I want to be. I don't have to have any belief, and this is me, and, you know, take me for who I am, and you don't judge my body, because my body is just in a soul. She did recognize the soul, and she waxed eloquent that way. And as I listened to it, I thought, well, there are certain truths that she is talking, that is true, that she is a soul in a body, et cetera, et cetera. But what she had done is divested herself of any form of accountability in saying, I am who I am, and I'm the boss of who I am, and nobody must tell me what to think, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is a failing, I believe, on the part of humanity, because what really, really happens is if a person comes into an egotistical place where I am everything, you know, they're really not answering, well, where did you come from? And where are you going to? And I'm meaning now from one life to another life. Like, you're making yourself the center. That is probably the biggest form of idol worship today, is to be egocentric and self-centered around, this is who I am, she said to everybody. But who are you, and who gave you life, and who's going to determine how long you live, and who's going to determine how much money you make? And, you know, you can go and say, but I am the master of my destiny. You have choices to make in the destiny that is written for you, but you are not in charge of the world. And in fact, you're not even in charge of yourself, because against your will, you came into this world, and it says, and against our will, we leave this place. The next great advantage that the Jews had from receiving the Torah is that until that point in time, they were subject to astrological forces, which we call in Hebrew the muzzle. We know that every single one of the nations have an angel that is in charge of them. There is a muzzle, and we know particularly when it came to Egypt and even afterwards with Bilam and in other places. People look, and even up to today, there are people that look into the stars and look at the astrological signs and do a whole lot of calculations to determine what their fate is and what their destiny is. Jews at Har Sinai, once they accepted the Torah, once they became Mekudesh, they became holy to Hashem, they transcended Mazel, okay? They became worthy of no longer being subject to the astrological forces. Our rabbis teach it like that. They say the words, Ein Mazel le-Yisrael. There is no astrology for Yisrael. And that really means that even if one's astrological destiny decrees, say, that he should have evil happen to him, if a person keeps Torah, we are told he should not have any fear, because the merit of Torah, of keeping Torah, of learning Torah, of being connected to godliness, has the ability to transform an evil destiny into a good one. And again, this lends very much to who we are as a people. Go look even today, now in the last 16 months since October 7th, and go look at the unbelievable miracles that are wrought on a daily basis for us. Yes, we tend to always focus on the negative and see the painful side. And I'm not saying that there isn't pain. There is pain. But certainly when you have crazy people who are trying to exterminate us, are sending thousands of missiles and ballistic missiles, and Iran's tried twice and whatever have you, and nothing happens. Go and look, just to satisfy yourself, if you do not believe what I'm saying, go Google what destruction one ballistic missile, one Scud missile can do. You know, we had the same thing when we saw crazy Saddam Hussein, when he sent the missiles over to Israel. There were 39 Scud missiles. Nobody died as a result of those Scud missiles. Maybe there were two or three deaths from people who suffocated because they had to wear the gas masks, etc., etc. But nobody got hurt. Go read what happened in Afghanistan when a Scud missile, I think it was in Afghanistan, or maybe in Iraq during the Gulf War, when a Scud missile dropped, and how many hundreds of people died and how much destruction happened. So once we became connected to God, we live above the astrological signs, and we have an incredibly powerful destiny where God is by our sides, where miracles happen to us on a daily basis, and we can live beyond that. And that is why we're very, very focused when negativity comes, that we not only go and fight with it on a physical level. Okay, we've got to have the IDF, we've got to, you know, have the Shin Bet, we have to have the Mossad, we have to have the clever people doing the clever things. But for the majority of the Jewish people, the way that we fight this war is we fight it like we're doing right now, sitting together and spending some time learning Torah, going and doing another mitzvah, whether it be charity or putting on tefillin or lighting Shabbos candles or putting up a mezuzah, keeping kosher, being nice to another human being, being kind, be politeful, being sensitive, visiting the sick. You get the point. Okay. Every time that we bring godliness into this world by doing an act of goodness and kindness, we are tipping the scales and bringing more goodness into this world. And yes, it's a fight between good and evil. There is negative in this world. There is bad. But the way that we fight it is that we don't necessarily need to send out the army all the time. We can do things like this, which are sometimes even more powerful than sending out the cavalry. And we need not forget this right now, right? There's so much going on and so much pressure going on with negotiations and all of that stuff. And again, I'm not saying don't do it, but understand that we are above nature. And if we are meritorious today, right now, the hostages can come home. And they can come home in the most innocuous way. Like, it doesn't mean that we have to be pushing for it. So that is something very, very important and a big advantage, that Ein Mazel b'Yisrael, that we do not have any astrological destiny. We are looked after always solely and only by God. I'd love to know your comments on what I'm saying. I don't mind pushback if you have any comments or you'd like to ask a question on what we're discussing. Our SMS line is 34519, and our WhatsApp number is 061-895-1019. Now, one of the other things that happened and that changed when we landed up at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, is that our name got changed. Until that point in time, we were known always as the Ivriim, the Hebrews. I have to tell a quick joke that, and it's not a joke, it's something that happened, but it was pretty funny. Probably about 10, 12, maybe 15 years ago, I had the honor and opportunity to address a group of women in Pretoria, about 5,000 women. They had gathered for Women's Day on the lawns of Parliament over there. And what they did is they asked for a woman representing each of the major religions in South Africa to be representative. So there was a woman from every denomination. And I was obviously called to represent the Jewish people, but when I got there on the program of events and on the label they gave me to put on my shirt, I was called Adel Kozilski Hebrew. I came from the Hebrews, and I had a little chuckle to myself that that was the ancient name that we were known, not the Jews. I was from the Hebrews. I'm going to discuss a little bit more about us changing from the Hebrews to the name Yisrael right after the break. This is Chai FM, and this is 101.9.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kozilski.
Okay, so our changing of the name from the Hebrews, from the Ivriim, to B'nai Yisrael, to the children of Israel, right? So until that point in time, as I said, we were known as the God of the as the Hebrews. In fact, Moses, when he comes to Pharaoh, he says, "The God of the Hebrews has sent me to you." Okay, now we're standing at Har Sinai. Our name changes to Yisrael. Yisrael, the letters Yisrael can be changed around to read Yashar Kel. I'm not saying it with the Aleph and the Lamed because it could mean God's upright one. We're told a lot about the name Israel. Now, our country is named Israel. The Jewish people are the people of Israel. Israel is very dominant. Again, it's something that has survived for I don't know how long. One of the things that we are taught, if you take the word Yisrael, Yud, Shin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed, and you use it as an abbreviation, it stands for a sentence that is Yesh Shishim Riboy Otiyot LaTorah, that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. But you could also go and say Yesh Shishim Ribot Anashim LaTorah, that there are 600,000 Jews in Torah. And so now we go down the path, the mystical path of understanding that the name Yisrael, representing the number 600,000, has tremendous repercussions on who we are. We have 600,000 letters in the Torah. We have 600,000 people in Israel. Now, straight away, you can WhatsApp if you want. I'm going to stop you before that. No, there aren't only 600,000 of us today. There's a good, 12, 13, 14 million Jews. So how can we say that there are 600,000 Jews in Israel? And what we are taught is that there are 600,000 soul roots. And the roots of the souls are found then in the Torah. Okay? There's also then the explanation, by the way, that there are 600,000 interpretations to every verse. And in fact, there are 600,000 interpretations on the simple verse, which we call pshat. Then there are 600,000 interpretations to allusion, which we call remez. There are 600,000 explanations to drush, which is homily, and 600,000 mystical interpretations, which are called sod. But let's go back to the fact there aren't 600,000 of us. There's 14 million of us or 12 million of us. So those are the basic building blocks of the Jewish people. But every single root soul has subdivisions and derivatives. And therefore, whilst the basic is 600,000, you will have then millions of derivatives and combinations coming out. Now, if you want to try explain that maybe through a more practical explanation, we can go and say we have 248 organs in our body, right? Some are livers and some we've got a liver and we've got a heart and we've got lungs and we've got eyes and we've got kidneys. But if you want to know how many cells there are, you're not going to have 248, you're going to have 100 million cells, because there's a lot of cells in livers and a lot of cells in the heart and a lot of cells in the kidneys. And so when we are looking at the caricature, so to speak, of the Jewish people, there are 600,000 basic fundamental souls. And in those souls, there is all the derivatives. And that's why we hold a lot and we push a lot that the Jewish people are one people. It doesn't matter that I'm South African and I live, you know, I'm Ashkenazi or I'm Sephardi, and there's somebody else that's living in America and they're something else, and somebody living in China and in Japan and in Sri Lanka and wherever it is that you want. How come we're all one people? Because we are derivatives from the same place. We are, mystically it's explained, we are one body. We happen to be scattered all over the place, but we are one body. And when a Jew gets hurt somewhere in the world, then the pain actually affects us directly, because we are connected mystically on a very, very deep level to each other, which is an incredible thing. And this is really something, this is kind of like the secret of one of the other secrets of why we manage to stay together. Because a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. It doesn't matter where you live, what circumstance you live in, what you call your name. It doesn't even matter the color of your skin. If you're a Jew, you're a Jew, and you're connected to this fundamental of 600,000 building blocks, and you form part of all of that. And it is 600,000 letters in the Torah, 600,000 explanations on every level of the Torah. And so 600,000 is a very powerful number. And I want to add here something unbelievably interesting that I came to learn just maybe a couple of years ago. If you go and look at the population in Israel, okay, we did not receive the Torah until there were six. I mean, we didn't receive the land of Israel until, I think they said, there was 600,000 men that had Brit Milah. What's interesting is that we have tenfold increased to more than 6 million. We were already getting close to our 12 million. But the more of the power of the Jew coming together as a conglomerate, the more powerful the Jewish nation becomes. So that is a really, really interesting thing. And if you go look in the Midrash again, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that if there are fewer than 600,000 Israelite males, then the Shekhinah, the divine presence, cannot rest on it. And that's why when we're looking at Matan Torah now, coming back again, it says that on the third day, God descended in the sight of all the people, meaning the Torah could not be given unless all the people were present. And we circle back again that the Torah wasn't given to individuals. Now, there's just one last question that I want to talk about, that I want to pick up on, and that is if this is the status of the Jewish people, that we are sanctified to God, that we now need to be a light unto the nation, that we entered into a marriage contract with God, etc., etc., why did God not create the Jewish people first and then give them the Torah? You know, when you get married, the first thing is that you're created, and then you meet your spouse, and then you make a ketubah, and then you get married. Why did we have the ketubah first, and then God created the nation of Israel? And the answer is that we see that when Adam was created on the sixth day, you know, he was created after everything else. He was like last in creation, but that was a sign of his greatness, that he would find a world ready for him. Similarly, all the nations had to be created first, and in order then for the Jew to be the Jewish nation to be created last, because we land up being the crown nation that comes with a lot of responsibility, with a lot of light and direction that we have to give to the rest of the world. So that is why things looked like they were done the wrong way around. And also for all of us to know that there is a concept of the fact that we are called the Dor De'ah, the nation that the generation that received the Torah was actually called the nation that understood De'ah, they understood God, and they understood things in a much more profound way than we could ever understand. And I think that concludes what I'd like to share with you today. I hope that this has broadened your mind. I hope I've given you some food for thought. And I'm wishing you all a Shavua Tov, a Chodesh Tov, for those that have now started the frantic preparations for Pesach. Take it easy. Try focus more on the spiritual than the physical, though the physical does matter. We don't want to hear any complaints after Pesach about the knedlach and the soup. So have a successful week ahead, and please God, I'll be back with you same time, same place next week. This is 101.9 Chai FM.